My name is William Del Pilar, and I am here with
Big John.
Big John. You know, John, we haven't called you Girthy John in a while. You've
Please
been on
don't.
A diet or something?
Please don't. I still get the feeling, every time you call me Girthy John, I feel like there should be that 70s porn music, like, bow, chicka, bow, bow.
Bow, wow, bow, 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 bow.
Yeah.
So that's why we call you, that's why I call you that, because, I mean, honestly, as a sailor, the only time I heard Girthy was...
Yeah, for porn, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a little innuendo, you know, because you guys, to the audience, you guys don't know John off camera. You see a polite, older gentleman, and off camera, we got a 12-year-old frat boy. But then again, that's how Dennis and I are. And speaking of Dennis, we welcome Mr. Velasco back again. Dennis, before I give your well-deserved introduction, because I want to make sure people know who you are, real quick. 1-2 sentences. What do you think of the draft?
I thought the draft was the draft was pretty good in a sense that there were really no surprises. You know, we basically knew who the top three were. We did have a little bit of a surprise at number four because Keegan Murray, who was picked at number four, is like
old man Murray.
Yeah, right. Well, he's like a tier or two below the person that was drafted after him, but we can get into that, you know, as we talk.
All right. Fair enough. You know, John, the way he was talking there, very slow, kind of reminded me of Mike Tyson. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Mike Tyson.
For the audience out there. Yes. If you go to our YouTube account, Sports Grumblings, we've had some serious breaking news the last few days.
Right.
And Mike Tyson gave his 2 cents on the SCOTUS hearing. And John has all the background story on that, but we won't get into it. But go to the YouTube, Sports Grumblings, and check Iron Mike out, as well as a few others. But first of all, let's welcome back Dennis Velasco. Dennis Velasco is the former EIC, Editor-in-Chief of Nerd Fantasy Sports. He's contributed fast fantasy basketball content to Sports Illustrated and The Score, and regular NBA content to Yahoo, Slam, SB Nation's Nets Daily, ESPN's O True Hoop Network, and many other hoop destinations on the internet. He's the founder of Hardwood and Hollywood, which was a Fox Sports partner and currently a Complex BuzzFeed publishing partner. However, you can check out his new site, Basketball State of Mind. That is basketballson.substack.com. basketballson.substack.com. Dennis, it's great to have you back on board. You know, I'll be honest, there was so much happening. I'm like, oh my gosh, the draft is on, you know. But outside of the Knicks, maybe the top three, the order they went, it did seem, I don't want to say uneventful, but there was no big shocking reverberations, I guess is how they would say it. But I do have some questions, and as does Big John. And at the end of the day, I was asking John about these contracts, and he was telling me that they can afford these huge guaranteed contracts because he's right. You have 12 players on the bench. Is that how much a team carries in terms of players?
You can carry up to 15.
That's what I thought, 15.
Yeah.
15. We always hear 12. But at the end of the day, my point is these kids are going to be rich, you know, and God bless them. You know, they work hard. And again, as a Latino, born and raised in a third world country, as a citizen, to me, I look at basketball, football, baseball, whatever. If it gets you out of the ghetto, the barrio, the trailer park, more power to you. Plus, that's the American dream. So my first question, though, is were you surprised the Magic went with Paolo Banchero out of Duke? Because I understand they didn't even work him out.
Well, here's the thing. Paolo Banchero has been the consensus number one pick until literally a couple of months ago, right? Everyone said, oh, Apollo's going to be number one. And then Jabari Smith basically came out of nowhere. Chet Holmgren was always up there, but there's questions about his physicality because he's tall and really, really thin. But was I surprised? Not really. I mean, the top three, I knew were going to be the top three. It was going to be in some sort of order. And really, you can't go wrong with picking any of those if you're the Magic.
Well, that makes sense.
Oh, I was just going to say, tell that to me about not surprised, because I actually put some money down on Smith being the number one overall pick. I saw him coming on, and you know, I think I got plus 225 on him to be the number one pick. So, no, I didn't throw a lot of money on him, but I just figured, all right, you know, he seems to, it seems to be trending that way. So yeah, definitely, that was a surprise to me, at least a little bit, that they didn't go with Jabari Smith.
Yeah, you know, the funny part about that is, there must have been some sort of rumblings where the Magic were like, oh no no, we're gonna take Banchero, because the line shifted from Jabari Smith, because he was the favorite to go number one. And then almost like probably 10 minutes before the draft, it switched,
right,
you know, to Banchero. And it's like, yo, that was a quick switch. So was, something must have gotten out, you know, as far as like the Magic who they were taking.
You know, that's true, because I was reading a lot about that today, that the line shifted. I'm like, man, is this not – to me, basketball has always been geared, and they worked with not – gambling associations, but it's just they've gone hand in hand over the years, and so I wasn't shocked to see that, surprised how it flipped like that. But you kind of segued into my next question, but before I get to it, what about the perception that these Duke superstars, they go into the NBA and they don't really live up to expectations? I mean, how's Zion Williamson doing? He's the last big Duke name that I remember. But in general, Danny Ferry and a lot of the younger point guards over the years. I mean, just for big names, just haven't done well in the pros. You really can't compare apples and oranges, but the kids from Duke and, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of it also has to do with health. So Zion Williamson, obviously, is health. But, you know, a person that came out of Duke that if he was totally healthy, he would probably be, like, top 10 all time, and that's Grant Hill. Mm-hmm. But he had issues. You're talking about Kyrie Irving is a Dukie. Granted, he only played, like, two games, but he was still the number one pick. That's how great he was. He came out of Duke. He's doing well when he actually plays. and then Jason Tatum. He's a Dookie. He's doing really well. So it really depends on, like, you know, what time period you're talking about. Because if you're going all the way back to Danny Ferry, then, yeah, you know, maybe not so much.
Well, the names you mentioned, those are guys that have gone there for the one and done pretty much, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So once that shifted, so I guess I wouldn't really call him. I mean, they are Duke. You can't take that away. But it's like, you know, they're just, it's a placeholder. You know, I got to go play a year here, maybe get my legs, my sea legs, and then head to the NBA. So I get, you're right, technically. I guess I look at it differently, but you're right. You know, Irving and those guys, I had no clue with some of those, because I moved out of North Carolina and I kind of stopped following the details. But that's an interesting answer there. The Thunder took center Chet Holmgren out of Gonzaga. There's concern, as you said, about his slight frame. And again, you've gotten me back into basketball. Football was always my shtick. But even I knew, you know, that these tall, rangy seven-footers, they just don't make it. And I stopped looking after a few minutes, but I quickly came across. Now, not all of these are thin build, but they're all seven-footers or more. And that is Greg Oden, Hashim Thabeet, Kwame Brown. He was a little young, though. And they may have had careers, but these were like number one overall picks, some of these guys. Kwame Brown, Darko Milicic. Is that how you say the last name?
Milicic.
Yeah, Milicic. Michael Olowokandi, Sean Bradley, and God bless him, he's paralyzed now. Had that terrible accident a few months ago on the bike, and I never saw a follow-up story until I researched him today, and he's paralyzed. So I really feel for him. And the most famous or infamous of them all, Manute Ball, because he was like, what, 7'8" or 7'6". And rest in peace, yeah. Manute Ball had a terrible disease and ended up passing away. But he did a lot for his people in the Sudanese, or tried to. But all those guys, seven-footers, extremely high draft picks. I mean, within the top five, most of them, if not number one or number two. And they all failed. So when I'm reading about Chet Holmgren, I'm like, if I'm a GM, I'm like, I'm staying away from the kid. You know, because you're talking a lot of guaranteed money, a high pick, and a pick like that can actually set you back, I think, a couple of years. What are your thoughts on that, or am I completely off base?
Well, I'm going to say you're completely off base, because I love Chet Holmgren. All those plays that you mentioned before, they don't have what Chet Holmgren has, right? And that's skill set. Chet Holmgren can get a rebound and for a slight frame, averaging 9.9 rebounds per game in college ain't bad. He can grab a rebound on a defensive end and go coast to coast. He can finish with a dunk. You know, one of the great things about him is his handle. He can dribble. He can shoot off the dribble. He can shoot off the catch. He's a great shooter. And if you watch him play, he's ferocious. He does not care. He will go after you. Like, there are games where he'll have, like, four fouls just because of how aggressive he is. Chet Holmgren, to me, if I had to choose from this draft class, I would have taken him number one, no question. Because he has the wingspan. He has the height, yes. But he can shoot through. He plays like a guard, you know.
That's what I'm going to ask you.
Yeah.
I know he can take a 3-point shot, but does he have the ability to be a threat at the point, or is he just a once in a blue moon?
Well, here's the thing. You're not going to play him a point guard. There's no way. But he can facilitate an offense. Watch him play, because when he gets a defensive rebound, if he doesn't go coast to coast, he'll hesitate, look at the court. He has great vision. He can pass the ball. He's a great player. So that's the reason why he was taking number two. And, you know, the Thunder, I mean, I think they lucked out, because I think Chet Holmgren is the real deal.
So you know, before we go to the next question I have, you mentioned the Thunder, and they seem to have jettisoned a lot, and we're going to go into rebuild mode, but they seem to have made out like fat rats in this draft. At what point do you see – how long do you think it's going to take them to become competitive? Because I'm basing this on the assumption they got a great draft class. But more importantly, how much time is it going to take Holmgren to really mature, maybe fill out a little bit? Because I believe everything you say, but that's what they always say about the top one, two, three. But the pro game, you're playing the best of the best every day. Versus every 4 to 5, 6 games in college. So how do you see the Thunder in terms of where, in terms of becoming competitive and playoff capable in terms of going deep, in terms of how long that process will take?
Well, it's going to really be up to them, because they have the pieces. They have, more importantly, the trade pieces in terms of draft picks, because they probably have like 100 draft picks or something like that in the next 7 years. It's something ridiculous. So if they wanted to get like an established veteran, you know, through a trade, it's easy for them. They have the cap space because all the guys, except for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, are on their rookie contracts making like $2-3 million. I mean, it's ridiculous. And they got Al Horford of the year. Just because the NBA has a minimum salary that every team has to have, right? So they just got Al Horford to boost up that salary because they have so much cap space. And honestly, I'm hoping that starting with the draft class that they have this year with Chet Holmgren, Usman Dieng, who's another guy with the length, he's going to be great, and, you know, Jalen Williams, that they decide, you know what, let's contend in 3 years. You know, let's give, you know, Chet, Yang, Williams. Well, they actually got two Jalen Williams, just different spells for Jalen. You know, let's do it now. You know, they got Josh Giddey over there who can take over for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander if they wanted to trade him. I would keep him. He's a great, you know, point guard. But I would say let's do this now. You know, why wait? You know, they had, you know, Kevin Durant, Russ Westbrook, and, you know, James Harden when they were young. And they made it to the NBA Finals, you know, and it's kind of sort of the same thing where everybody's homegrown. But eventually, those great players, like the young players they have now, they're going to demand high salaries, you know. So work on it now. Work on
that
it now.
That makes perfect sense. What about this Usmane, how do you say that last name?
Dieng.
Dieng. Okay, you mentioned him, I think, there. How long? Now, I was reading that he's actually a project. In a sense, it's going to take him a little bit longer. Does he fit in the plans as you described, or is he going to be somebody who needs some serious seasoning?
Well, I mean, a lot of rookies are going to need seasoning, but I think he'll be fine. I thought he was taken a little bit too early at 11. I think, you know, he's a lottery pick, but, you know, I thought he'd probably go like 14, like right on the cusp. But, you know, he's going to be fine. You know, he comes from the New Zealand Breakers. And, you know, although, you know, that is like a great league to play in. But, you know, it has to be something where the OKC Thunder say, all right, look, we got all these young guys. We're going to let them marinate for a few years. And we got to go for it. Because you can only stay young and be the next big thing for so long before you need to actually show something for everything that you have, you know?
Right, right. Dennis, let's backtrack one second. Can you explain the term lottery for the novices that aren't as familiar? Because, you know, this, I read the Knicks, you know, dropped out of the lottery picks, you know, because of all the trades and all that. And that made me, I just thought it was a good question to what's considered a lottery pick, where in the draft is a star, and just so people can understand that process of that.
Sure. So the lottery is basically all the teams that don't make the playoffs. Mm. So that'll be 14 teams, right? And the way that they do the lottery order, they use like a weighted measuring of it. So the teams with the three worst records will have the same chance to get the number one pick. And then your chances go down the better you are, you know, within, you know, the 14 teams. So lottery pick is 1 of 14.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. So when they drop out of the lottery pick, they're dropping out of the top 14 then, in essence.
Right.
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
And it was instituted, Dennis, to prevent tanking.
Yeah.
So, right, like, so another, like, for example, in the NFL, teams have incentive to lose. If they're not going to make the playoffs, they have incentive to lose as many games as possible to get the better picks the following season. The NBA combated that by, like you said, the three worst teams have an equal shot of the number one pick. So, yeah. And it's the famous reaching into the fishbowl and grabbing out the name or however they do it now. But in general, do you like that? Like, do you like that system of a lottery, or do you think it should be more like the NFL and MLB where it's more strictly based on the reverse order of finish?
I don't know, because it's sort of fun to see, like, you know, a team that should have picked 10th. Oh, damn, they're picking 3 now? How'd that happen? You know, because there's still a chance for them to – so it's intriguing. But, you know, as far as, like, yeah, we're starting – see, I hate, like, teams that don't compete. So right. I like the lottery system because it's like, yeah, you still got to compete because, you know, especially me as a coach, it's like it's all about competing. Like, you don't control wins and losses, but you control your, you know, competition level. And
right.
Why wouldn't that be high, especially – as a professional athlete, you know?
And, you know, John, the thing, too, with basketball and baseball, those are pretty much guaranteed contracts. And 160 games, those guys are worn out. And I think it's much easier to be able to tank it, or else the NBA wouldn't have come up with that. In football, those guys are playing on incentives to the final game. You know, they want that extra sack, you know, extra yards. The guy's like, look, you're not going to pull me out. I don't want you to get hurt for next season. Yeah, but I got $500,000 riding if I can score another touchdown. So, I mean, I'm speculating a bit, but I just think it's a different game. Plus, there's 16 games. And it's also easier, I think, to see somebody tanking, like the guy on Green Bay who was defending Michael Strahan for that final sack on Brett Favre. You know, the guy just tanked it. Yeah. And poor Michael Strahan, because I'm in the camp like, dude, you were giving it. You own the record. We acknowledge that. But he's got to live with that. So I understand why he's pissed, because that's something you want to earn. But I'm digressing. You know, okay, Detroit lost out on the lottery. Yeah, I suppose in terms of getting the top pick there. But what do you think they felt by grabbing Jaden Ivey? And isn't he a hometown guy?
Well, Jaden Ivey's a hometown guy in terms of his grandfather, his father played football there, and his mom played for the Detroit Shock in the WNBA. But he is an Indiana boy. So he played for the Purdue Boilermakers. And his mom is the head coach for the Notre Dame women's basketball team.
Wow.
So he actually grew up with basketball just by being around his mom. And it's amazing to me that he fell to number 5 to the Pistons. The Pistons, Detroit basketball, they got a great player. I'm telling you, Jaden Ivey, he's going to be exciting. He's definitely somebody to watch. I think him and Kate Cunningham in the back.
Right, yeah.
It's going to be a good duo. And then you add in Jalen Duren, who they got. You know, he was I think he's picked number 13. At one point, he was considered the number one pick also. The only reason why he dropped was because, you know, he went to the University of Memphis. You know, he's a one-and-done guy. He was very inconsistent, but so was that team. That team was so weird because they had a ton of talent. Jalen Duren, Amone Bates, who reclassified from being like a junior to a senior so he can go there. He's the youngest Gatorade player of the year in high school. You know, he got that as a sophomore. Everyone had high hopes for him, but he had an inconsistent year. Lester Quinones, you know, Long Island stand up, John. It was just a weird season for them. And that's the only reason why Jalen Duren went down, because he just went down with that whole team, you know, in terms of inconsistency in play.
Wow.
Duren and Ivy, I was like, man, that's amazing.
Now, what do you think of Ivy? Basically, look, the Kings passed on him, right? And that's basically because he said, I'm not playing for you.
Well, the thing is, the Kings passed on him because they already have two point guards. You know, they have De'Aaron Fox, who's, you know, the all-star. They have Davion Mitchell, who they, you know, he's a rookie last year. And before that, they picked Tyrese Haliburton. So they had three point guards, and it just didn't work. That's why they traded Tyrese Haliburton to the Pacers for Domantas Sabonis, you know, just before the, you know, trade deadline ended last year. Because you can't have three point guards who are great and not play them. It's like you're not getting any value, you know.
Well, he could have played at the two, right? But I think, didn't he make it clear, I don't want to go to Sacramento? Because I thought there was buzz that Sacramento was still thinking to take an Ivy, and he just made it clear to them, I'm not going to play for you, right?
Yeah, he didn't do anything for him. They didn't have any medical records. He didn't try out for him. He didn't do any of that. But, I mean, he probably saved the Kings from themselves, because the Kings usually make these dumb mistakes, and it just wouldn't have made sense for them to take Jaden Ivey. Because when would he play? When would Davion Mitchell play? You know, those are two young guys that you're like starting their development because you're not playing them.
And for people wondering why you would say that, you know, Dennis actually, when Dennis started coming on, I started reading up, watching a little bit more, and I had no idea that the Sacramento Kings make the Cleveland Browns look like the New England Patriots. I mean, that's how bad that franchise has been run. And I say that because it's been like 16 years or something like that. You know, so I can see him saying that. And what's that say about an organization? Because even during the last few months, it's like they're trying to defend themselves. No, we're not a bad organization. You know, because, I mean, what's that say, Dennis, about an organization? I guess what I'm asking is, how do the freaking – you got to win, I know. But what can they do to start rebuilding, to get out of a 16-year funk?
Probably not put, you know, former great players in the front office, because they had a chance to get Luka Doncic at number two, but instead they chose Marvin Bagley. Is Marvin Bagley still on the Kings? Nope. They traded him away, you know.
Shades of Sam Bowie and Michael Jordan.
No, exactly. It's like, and they had Vlade Divac as a GM. Listen, he probably knows more basketball than me. Granted, well, maybe that might not be true, but he definitely, like, has more experience in a pro game than I do. But Luka Doncic, like, I think everybody knew how great he was going to be. It's just, and at number two, you take Marvin Bagley. Look, I'm not going to lie. I love Marvin Bagley. He was shown out as a high schooler in the Drew League. You know, he really made it look like he was going to be a great pro. But I think just like he wasn't mentally ready, you know, because he had all these accolades as a young kid. And, you know, I see it happen all the time. They think, oh, man, I'm getting all these accolades. I'm awesome. I'm not going to work. You know what I mean? I think that's just what happened to Marvin Bagley. I still, you know, hope that he turns it around because he's still a young guy. But for Vlade Divac to skip over Luka Doncic, it didn't make any sense to me, you know. But as far as the Kings, what can they do? Vivek Mandeep should sell his ownership. you need a new owner. Because this, he, like, so he coaches his daughter's basketball team. Like, you know, they're in grade school, right? This was, like, a few years ago he mentioned this. He actually said for an NBA team to cherry pick. Do you guys know what cherry picking means?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he wanted professional basketball players to cherry pick, meaning when they're transitioning to defense, he has one guy stay down still at their basket to score after their team hopefully gets a defensive rebound.
Right.
And they just, like, throw a full court for it. That makes no sense in the NBA game. Are you serious? You know, it just – it might work for, like, grade school basketball. It's not working for professional basketball.
That's
right. Wow. Well, listen – getting back to the draft per se, though, let's talk about both of your guys' old stomping grounds there, New York and the Knicks. So I think one of the images going around the internet is Stephen A. Smith, you know, with his head down, his legs in a mansplaining position, spread out wide for the world, and like, what are you doing, you know? And so when I started looking at it, I'm like, wow, what did they do? So talk to us about the Knicks drafting. They dropped out of the first round, if I'm correct. I mean, I have a question for you later on, but let's just bring it up now. I mean, was all this done because they had their eyes on Jalen Brunson and the money that's going to cost? I mean, what happened?
Yeah, so originally they had the number 11 pick, which they traded to OKC, and they picked DN. And they basically traded for three future first-round picks. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be three 2023 picks, so next year. But those picks are so heavily protected. They're probably not going to get, like, a number 11 pick like they had this year. So I have it in front of me because it's just so ridiculous I have to read it. All right, so they get the Detroit Pistons first pick next year, right? But it's protected 1-18 until 2024. Okay, so they might get that because the choice is gonna be horrible. You know, despite a great draft, they're not gonna be that good. So they'll probably get that one. They got the Washington Wizards pick, and it's protected 1-14.
Dennis, what do you mean by protected for the audience?
Oh, so protected means so you can trade your pick to another team, but you can say, but I'm protecting it from picks 1-2.
Oh, my goodness.
So if the pick falls 1-8, we still keep it.
Yeah, so they're saying we're giving you our pick, but not if we fall into pick 1, 2, or 3. But that, yep. It's like, Dennis, why bother even making a trade like that? That just seems so ridiculous.
No.
Well, it gets deferred.
New York Knicks.
Yeah, well, William, it's not that they don't get any pick. It gets deferred to the following season.
Yeah, so I'll just read off all the picks. The Detroit Pistons protected 1-18 until 2024, protected 1-13 until 2025, and it's protected 1-11 in 2026, and protected 1-9 in 2027. So the Knicks will not get a top nine pick at all. So for the Washington Wizards pick, it's protected 1-14 next year. They're not going to get it because they're going to be horrible. Protected 1-12 the following year. Probably not going to get that either. Protected 1-10 in 2025. Protected 1-8 in 2026. So they're not getting a first, you know, number one pick. They're not going to get – it's going to be bad. And then the Denver Nuggets pick is protected 1-14 until 2025.
They
get the Nuggets pick. They'll get the Nuggets pick. Not the Pistons pick. I take that back. They should get the Nuggets pick. Because the Nuggets should be good.
So this was basically cap management, right? Because these are basically those picks.
Yeah.
Those picks are just like, okay, these are slots that we're not paying for anymore, basically, right? And they could use them as capital if they need to make any trades.
Right. So it's not bad overall. It's not what the fans wanted. Right?
No.
And we are talking to New York Knicks, not the Sacramento Kings.
Right. Well, here's the thing. There are a lot of New York Knicks fans, and I grew up with a lot of them. And, you know, being a Brooklyn Nets fan, I get a lot of crap. But a lot of Knicks fans think, oh, we're going to have three picks next year. No, you're not, because they're so protected. I don't even know when you're going to get these picks. I mean, you have picks you know, protected as far as 2027. You know, that's like, come on, man. It's like, you may not get three picks next year like you think. And the funny part is, you know, well, funny in an ironic way and petty if you hate the Knicks, next year's draft is supposed to be really, really, really deep. Mm. So, you know, if there's any draft to trade into, it looks like, yeah, next year's. And while the Knicks did do that, there's so many protections, you know, they'll probably only get one of the three that they, you know, traded for.
Right.
Okay, so John, I agree with John. That's what I started to figure out in my redneck ways. Hey, this seems to be a, you know, let's get our cat situation. And then that's when I started realizing, well, that makes sense for Jalen Brunson, though. What's he bring to the table? How much is he going to cost them? And does he make them a winner? Or you still need players around him, right?
Yeah, so what happened today, the Knicks traded Nerlens Noel and Alec Burke to free up more cap space to sign Jalen Brunson. So they'll probably be able to get him now because Brunson will probably command about $20 million a year. To me, that's crazy. Is he a good player? Yeah, he's a really good player. He's not worth $20 million. You know what I mean? And if the Knicks think he's the savior, same old Knicks.
Dennis, we were talking about the Sacramento Kings in, 16 years of inglorious infamy. But the last time, I don't follow basketball like you do, but the last time I remember the Knicks being national spotlight, you know, on television and all that, was like in the Stark era, you know, way back then. I mean, how long has it been since they've actually been a competitive team year in, year out? I'm not talking about they make it one year, you know, a little blip. When's the last time they've been consistently competitive? I'm being honest. I mean, the Stark era is the last time I remember.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, through the 90s, even up to the end of the 90s, in 1999, you know, they faced the Spurs in the NBA Finals. That's when Marcus Camby was blowing up, and he was probably the best player. But they actually do have the worst record in the NBA since the year 2000.
Wow. So I apologize to the Sacramento Kings. I apologize deeply. New York City, living up to how I perceived them at times.
Well, you know what's interesting, William? You asked that question. I was about to throw in a joke, but then I realized it's actually true. The last time the Knicks were consistent winners, their finals game, 6, was interrupted by a white Bronco with OJ in it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was in college then.
By the way.
I was coming home from work.
By the way, that's not a joke, by the way. I think was it against the Rockets, Dennis, game 6?
It was against the Rockets,
yeah. Like, I'm watching the game like any good New York Knicks fan, hoping Ewan can bring home the trophy, you know, and it's like – we interrupt this game to bring in some breaking news, and there's a white Bronco being chased at like 30 miles an hour. And so, ironically, when you say when's the last time they were consistent winners, that's the first thing that popped into my head. Maybe the Camby era a little bit, but like to me, really, it was that Ewing, Starks, those guys, Oakley, and those guys who were.
That's it, Oakley.
And literally. They were interrupted by the OJ chase. Yeah. That's how long ago it was.
I was trying to think of it. I just Oakley was just physical. He was so blue collar. He was like, I just love the guy.
All the Knicks were.
I love Ewing. I never liked Ewing at all, going back to the John Thompson, Georgetown days, et cetera, et cetera. But I wanted Oakley to get that ring. And just, I mean, if it was Jordan, just the Bulls, it was just time of the Bulls, you know? Yeah. You know, but in New York's savior is the fact that they have a rabid base. New York City's largest city in the country. They're like the Cincinnati Bengals. People don't realize the Brown family didn't care about building a winner because they were profitable. So I'd imagine the Knicks lose or win, they're bringing in the money. So I guess at the end of the day, that owner doesn't care about winning. Now I can see why the fans and players don't care for the owner. They kind of put the blame of all this on them.
Yeah.
But a great story.
James Dolan. And actually, the Knicks are by value the number one NBA team.
You have to understand, in New York, the easiest thing you could do, if you live in the five boroughs of New York, the easiest thing you could do, all subways, all buses lead to Madison Square Garden. So the easiest thing you could do as a New Yorker, you don't have to drive. There's no such thing as driving to a Knicks game or a Rangers game, even if you're into hockey. You just hop on whatever subway runs through your neighborhood, basically. Eventually, you'll end up – and for people that don't know, the subway stops underneath Madison Square Garden. So you get off the subway, you get on an escalator, an elevator, you're watching a Knicks game. So they're so ingrained, I guess sort of like the Celtics are for Boston – they're so ingrained into that city that they'll always be popular. The Nets never had that popularity, but the Knicks, they're just the default, hey, we're not doing anything today, let's go grab a Knicks game at the Garden, that sort of thing.
Tickets are expensive, though.
Now they are,
The thing with New York City, Boston, and all the East Coast is you grow up and your family kind of dictates where this is, who our team is, and it's part of the culture. Once you get out to the Southwest and the West Coast, beach is great today. I'm not Chargers. Yeah. I'm not going to pay $400 to save the family. What are they going to lose? 31-7. I mean, if you build a winner, they'll come. Unless you're in one of those old institutions and you can be losers for years and years, and they'll still come. You know, so kudos to the East Coast for that. Okay, back to the draft here. The Houston Rockets stopped Banchero. Real quick, Dennis, what's Banchero's background? That sounds like a Brazilian name, a Portuguese name.
I'm not really sure. All I know is that he grew up in Seattle, right? There's a lot of former pro players from Seattle, like Isaiah Thomas, Dave Robinson, like Brandon Roy. And all those Seattle guys, they all stick together. So when Banchero was young, they actually, took him under his wing. And he's been playing with pro players since he was young. You know? So that's funny how his game got so good.
You mentioned Nate Robinson, and I think now, what does the average person think when they hear Nate Robinson, big job?
They
think of him getting knocked the F out by Jake Paul. Right?
Oh, dude, I was scared for him, man. The way him and that other guy went down, that's totally a different topic. Okay. Hey, we're having fun tonight. That's what it's about. The Houston Rockets felt Banchero would be there. Now, every team has a backup plan, and I can – but that said, I can imagine the quick panic there. But Jabari Smith, I mean, top three, I assume he's a great consolation prize. But how much of a drop-off, or is there any, between him and Banchero in terms of what they were hoping to get versus what they got?
All right, so the kind of even, but I would probably give it to Smith a little bit because he plays great defense. Banchero, he's basically like a 6'10 point guard, great offensively. His defense depends on his drive, like if he wants to play it. Jabari Smith is on 100 the whole time, high motor guy. Offensively, he can shoot the ball, he can take it to the rack. He can guard, positions 1 to 5. He's a great player. If I had to pick between those two, I would definitely pick Jabari Smith.
Oh, wow.
And for the fact that he fell to the Rockets, it's a great fit because, Jabari Smith, he doesn't have to worry so much about having to score because they have a young guy, Jalen Green, Flip Squad. Got to shout out my fellow Filipino, Jalen Green. I think he averaged some 37 points his last six games. It took him a while to get used to the NBA. He was struggling. But, towards the end of it, he was, really lighting it up. And there's a lot of high hopes that he can, now that he's had, the year under him, he can, take his game up another level. To have Jabari Smith to sort of take away the, pressure on him, along with, Josh Christopher and Michael Porter Jr., they're going to be a nice team. And, what's great about them is their coach is let's score. You know what I mean? Shoot the three. Let's get on a fast break. So it'll be fun to watch.
That reminds me of Odin. We were talking about Odin earlier. Because I think Durant came out that year. They were probably having the same conversation, Oh, man, I missed out on Odin. Well, let's settle for Durant.
Yeah. You can't lose. And by the way, if Greg Odin was healthy, he could have lived up to that number one overall pick.
Oh, no, I don't doubt that from anywhere. Sam Bowie, too. Sam Bowie with his two fragile feet. I mean, I actually was rooting for Odin because he was – I saw him interviewed. I heard the story. Very nice guy, you know? Yeah. Very, you know, but and sometimes when you get so much negativity, you can't help but want to root for the guy. But a lot of the analysts hit it right on the head with, about him and his injuries. But that said, there's so many players out of that list we talked about earlier. It was injuries that didn't. In fact, four or five of those players, as I was studying them, it so many knee surgeries over the years. And when you're that tall, that skinny, and even trying to fill out, your joints stay the same size. They don't grow. Your muscles may grow, but not your joints.
Right. You know? And, you know, enough respect to the candy man, Michael Olowokandi, but the reason why he was picked number one was because there's really no one else to pick at number one. It was a pretty bad job. I'm sure there are great players that came from it. I can't think of any, you know, off the top of my head. But I just remember that as being as one of the worst draft classes ever.
You know, I studied the NFL a lot, and you look at some of the draft classes, and after 4 to 5 years, it's like maybe one or there's nobody from the first round, and the star out of that class is like a third rounder RB right. or something. You know, John, I'm sure I've seen that a lot too.
Yeah. Hey, William, before you move on, to answer your question, I was looking this up while you guys were talking. Banchero is actually multiracial, as Dennis mentioned. But his mother is African American, born here in the U.S. His father's actually Italian.
Oh, and, Italian. There you go.
He speaks Italian, and he actually played for Italy's national team. So, not nice. Portuguese, not Hispanic, but Italian, actually. So, just
well, Portuguese, Brazil is a European, but it makes sense though. And I assumed he was multiracial. I just didn't bring it up. I don't want to get political tonight. Every time you
mention not political. It's just that you asked.
No, I know. You know how the world is. You know, so I just kind of stay with that.
But they're not watching they're not watching this show. That's not the
That's
audience.
True. They're not watching Bachelor. Okay, that's so who do you see as the winners in this draft? The winners and losers, just a couple off the top of your head.
Definitely the Pistons, you know, for the reasons I mentioned before, with Ivy falling into their laps and, you know, them being able to get Jalen Duren. OKC had a great draft. You know, I think they're going to be really good. I just keep hoping that they choose to, like, let's win. You know what I mean? Because there's only so much you can do with development. Yes, development is very important. And being a youth basketball coach, it is very important. But this is the pros now. Let's win something. You know, let's make OKC happy again.
That makes perfect sense. What about your Nets? I mean, I don't think they had a first-round pick at all.
They didn't even have a pick. But
Yeah,
I just wanted to mention the Spurs also did really well, you know, with their draft. You know, they got Jeremy Sochan from Baylor, right? Really great player. I think he can be when they drafted Kawhi Leonard, like I got the same sort of vibe with that guy. Kawhi Leonard, when healthy, is like one of the best players in the NBA. You know, I really like, you know, what they did with that pick. But it's the Spurs. You should never be, you know, surprised. They got Malachi Branham, you know, from the Ohio State. Another great pick. You know, like those three teams stand out to me as, you know, being the winners. The losers, it's obvious. It's the New York Knicks.
You know, kind of slamming his own hometown.
No, look, hey, it's just true. You know, I told you what the draft protections are. You know what I mean?
So. No, I don't disagree at all. I'm just poking fun at you. Because the thing about New Yorkers, and I'm sure you guys as New Yorkers realize that y'all think you're the best in the world. That's the reputation y'all have.
We don't think that. We know that.
Like I said, y'all think that. Okay. Okay, so the next question, it's not a fun question, but it's kind of a fun, you know, what fans would argue. I'm pretty sure John would agree with me, but as a business, having a Waj and I don't want to mispronounce it, Shams Charania.
Adrian Wojnarowski or Woj?
Yeah, Woj.
Charania.
Right. They were
so Woj and Shams. Those are their nicknames. Woj and Shams.
Woj and Shams. So having Woj and Shams announcing the picks up to 5 minutes before the NBA announced it as a business, we love it because we're working on the computer. Right. Boom, get it. But as a fan and somebody watching the television, there seems to be a lot of anger. What are your thoughts on something like that?
It's horrible. Like, let's get rid of it. It's like, if I wanted, you know, all of that, I'll go on Twitter. You know,
exactly. Like,
you know, it's like, why would you like announce it? Like, oh yeah, coming in for Bulge, the Nuggets are going to take. You know, it's like, there's no drama. Like, this is supposed to be entertainment, right? It's sports. It's entertaining.
It's also then ratings.
Build the drama.
It's the ratings.
Yeah, build the drama, man.
Yeah. You
know? I also wonder how it affects the betting in Vegas because. There's, you know, you put your money down on these picks. You know, Vegas will take any bet just about, right? And I think what people don't realize is that there's a lot of live betting going on in Vegas. So it's one thing to say, oh, a week before the draft, I put some money on Jabari Smith or whatever. That's, you know, most casual fans may do that. But there's professional guys. They'll make that Jabari Smith bet. And then to your guys' point, they're in either in Vegas at the table, at the window, waiting for those odds to flip. And the second they flip, they're adjusting their bet because they know, hey, like you guys said, these odds move so much away from Jabari. Hey, where's it going? Do I need to put a hedge bet in? You know, because this is how they make a living. You know, it's not fun. They earn – that's how they feed their families.
Right. So I imagine they have a – I mean, once somebody sees this, they're such pros and so on top of it.
Agreed.
But that said, if I'm the NBA, I'm angry because you're dealing – you want the higher ratings.
Right.
That brings greater advertising money, higher prices. And to me, this is what I loathe about it most. It's disrespectful to the institution you say you love and care about so much. You know, if you're selfish, you already got a six-figure paycheck. Now you're just being a jerk by doing this and taking away the thrill. Now, I get it. They're under tremendous pressure. But if I'm the NBA, I'm going to ESPN and to the Athletics. You guys do this again, we're locking you out of every locker room, you know, because you're messing with their money. You're messing with it. And again, you're messing with the fans. And as you say, as silly as it sounds, it's that moment. I mean, with the Knicks, you didn't like it. But for somebody, another team, that moment, you get your guy, you know, even as John says, yeah, I made the bet. So they're taking a lot away from that, in my opinion. I actually don't care either way. But as a fan, that's how I would feel about it. And as a business owner, I guess. What about you, John? What do you think at the end? You like it or not? Don't care?
I'm indifferent towards it because, like you said, we've been in this industry long enough where, let's be honest, William, if you and I somehow had a pipeline to know breaking news 5 minutes before they announced it, you know as well as I do, we'd be tweeting that thing 1,000 times, make sure everybody sees it, right? And at the end of the day, who's paying Woj's salary? Who's paying Sham's salary? It's not the NBA. It may be derivative and based on the NBA, but it's ESPN. It's the Athletic. So if the Athletic says, hey, Shams, you got to beat Woj. And Woj, you got to beat Shams. They don't even care what the NBA is saying. They're out to beat each other. It's competition for breaking news. Like, I mean, this isn't new. This goes back to the 30s and 40s. If you ever watch any of those film noirs, there's always one scene in there where every reporter at the end of a trial starts racing to the phones to call in the story, right? Breaking news.
Oh, yeah, that goes back to KFFL. We used to get agents to give us all this information because they wanted it up there. And eventually, we got so much traffic, the agents were just calling us. Of course, some of them would lie. They wouldn't lie. They'd exaggerate. We got this agent to tell us, my guy just made a 60-yard punt. And he would tell us the truth. But we're like, nah, hold on a second. So we check it out. You know, it was a 40-yard punt that rolled 20 more yards. So, and John, you and I had this conversation on a different topic, though, about how you can make something look like the truth. And technically, it is the truth, but it's taken out of context. But all right, Dennis, thank you for that talk.
Hold on. Could I just give one more criticism about
the draft? Oh, we're not done yet. I got more questions.
So another thing that I hated about watching this draft, they would say this player's traded to this team, but they wouldn't say for what.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Was I didn't horrible. Understand that at first. Okay.
Yeah, it was horrible. Why?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because when I was reading on this, they were complaining about the 5 minutes, and then it said it got even worse with the draft. It started to get detailed, and I'm like, okay, it's a little too detailed for me. It makes sense, though. But see, that also adds to the patheticness of it all. And, you know, it's trying to be coy, I guess, for whatever reason, and it backfires on their face. And yet, I guess what I'm trying to say is they kind of ruined it for a lot of fans. But, John, you're right. Get off Twitter if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, and also, honestly, I'm not going to I don't like it, but I will say, Dennis, that annoys me too. Not just the NBA draft. The NFL draft does it all the time too. Yeah. Like in the first round, there's all this excitement and buzz, and you've got the biggest audience of any draft of many. And it's like, the Vikings have traded back, or, the Lions have made a trade with the Vikings. Here's the Lions pick. And you're like, all right, what did they have to give up to move up 15 spots? You know, and then you got to go to NFL.com, and maybe that's why they do it, because eventually you're going to make your way to NFL.com.
No, they don't do it because of that, John. They do it because they make the trade. So once a trade is made, the new pick layout is given out. And so they have to wait for the details of the trade. So they're not doing what these two guys did. They're just
I understand that part, but I'm saying to Dennis's point when they said – you know, when they would announce the trade, and by the way, here's the team that traded into the spot, Dennis is saying the compensation was never announced. The terms of the deal was never announced. Yeah, yeah. And they do the same thing in the NFL. Like, you'll find out the details of the trade way after the round is over or something. Yeah. And that's frustrating. But you know what? I think it's not as frustrating to fans as it is to writers. I think writers want to immediately formulate, especially with Twitter and with the social media platforms, like, we want to get our take out there, boom, 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 right? Like, we were trying to talk Dennis into live-tweeting the draft, right, the NBA draft. I was live-tweeting the NFL draft. And seriously, you want to know right away, what was the compensation? Because I got to come up with a three-second decision if this was a stupid trade or not. You know what I mean? As a writer, as an opinion offerer, right? So
No, that makes sense. I kind of never care, maybe because I was never writing those articles I assigned to somebody else. But I just always assume at least in the NFL, once you leave the second round, it goes woo in terms of interest. So
you would think so. You would think so. Yeah.
You know, you're right. The April was our most trafficked site. You would think it'd be the summer and the actual season, but it was a draft. So Dennis, would you sit there and say that coverage? They were the losers of the draft when picking winners and losers.
Yeah, like for people like me, like I'm a nerd. You know, I love the NBA draft. I've been doing a mock draft since Clarence Weatherspoon, in the 80s. Yeah, so I've been doing mocks for a long time, and it was just annoying. And, for example, if you want to get technical, like when OKC traded 3 first-round picks to the Knicks, which ones? Because they have a ton of future first-round picks from, all these trades, like Paul George and whatnot. And then, what are the protections? Like, that's never mentioned. Like, all right, so they got 3 picks from OKC, but are they OKC's picks or some of the picks that are owned by other teams? You know what I mean? So it was just annoying. And if you were a writer covering that, oh, man, if you were solely only watching ESPN's coverage, you'd be so pissed. But having covered the draft live, just quick draft story, I was writing for The Score, and I was working with the Basketball Jones guys. So when I was assigned for the 2010 NBA draft, I was supposed to sit next to Zach Lowe. But since I'm friends with all the Basketball Jones guys, I was like, I'll just hang out with them in the back. So, it might have been a career changer just sitting next to Zach Lowe, who's the Lowe podcast. He's on ESPN all the time. It might have been, life-changing, but instead I chose to party with the party guys and, because they were in the back because that's where all the food was. So that might have been a wrong decision. So if you're writing and you're covering it, usually they give you sheets right away on, what the trade was and all the particulars. But, again, if you're just watching ESPN and you're really into this, you'd be pissed because you didn't hear what the compensation was.
Right.
And but to defend you, Dennis, I don't care who it is, what industry, ranging from gaming to politics to sports, every analyst are nerds, because that's why we know. Yeah. So, in my heyday in football, it's like off camera, guys. I was telling to the audience, you know, Dennis, you know, I prepare questions and all. Dennis, like, oh, I haven't always seen them. I'm like, well, you're not supposed. It doesn't matter when you know your stuff, and that's why we bring Dennis on, is because he knows his stuff and he doesn't have to wing anything. But in defense of everybody in the industry, we're all nerds, and that's what makes us good at what we do. You know, so in fact, the people who created the atomic bomb, they were science nerds. All right. So thanks for the coverage on the draft. But I do have some questions. What's up with Kyrie Irving? So he's taken in his contract, but there's still talk of a potential trade. What do you see in that situation? Before we get your take, Big John, what do you think is going to happen? Think he stays or goes?
I think he goes. He doesn't want to stay. I mean, he wants to do a sign and trade. The Nets
you can't do that anymore.
Exactly.
Once he opted in, he can't do a sign and trade because he opted in. So basically, the way the sign and trade would have worked is, if he did a sign and trade, the Nets would have to agree to the compensation. But not only that, the team that's getting Kyrie Irving, they have to at minimum give him a 3-year extension. So no team wanted, other than the Lakers, wanted to do that. Literally no team. And you're talking about a top 10 talent, you know, currently in the NBA. Just because of how much a headache Kyrie Irving is, you know, with all his off-the-court stuff. You know, but he did opt in for the $36.5 million. He can still get traded. I think it actually makes it easier, you know, for him. Because now it's like, all right, I'll play out this year for whomever, and I'm just going to make sure I play at least 70 games, do very well, and I'm going to get that 5-year supermax from somebody next season when he's an unrestricted free agent.
So at the end of the day, though, he kind of indicated he doesn't want to be in Brooklyn anymore, right?
I think that's a little bit exaggerated, because having covered the Brooklyn Nets and still having some sort of contacts within it, it's not that he didn't want to. They were actually very close to doing an extension before all this blew up. Mm. The extension talks were going very, very well, but the Nets just balked at, you know, his final offer, where he wanted to, you know, like, he was fine with the incentives, like, okay, I'll have to play a certain number of games, you know, and whatnot. He was fine with all that, but at some point it just got very bad very quickly. But I do think it's a little exaggerated, because if you think about it, the media were saying, oh, yeah, Kyrie Irving is gone. He's going to not opt in, right, become a free agent, and take some $6 million from the Lakers to play with LeBron. You know, and that was almost 100% people were saying. But that wasn't the case at all. He's not going to give up $30 million. You know
what I mean? Right. You know, Dennis, that's the case of today's reporting. People don't actually research, make calls. That made the Washington do and the Sharks do, but most don't. And then what happens is these stories get their own legs, and what they're saying may happen. An average reader sees it as that's going to happen. You know, so that's how I see it. And I've seen that from years ago. And it's lazy reporting. You know, I think, John, your good friend, Tom Gasol mentioned that, you know, lazy reporting. Personally, I've worked with over a couple hundred reporters over a 10-year period, and I would guess that it's about 60-70% of them are lazy reporters. They wait for the insiders to spill out, and then they write the stories. The good ones, the insiders are calling them. An insider will call that local beat reporter who's really tuned into that team to get the information on that. But we live in a new era, and I'm not defending Irving as much as condemning what we call media today. But real quick, one final question on the three big guys now on that team, Simmons, Durant, and Irving. Is it me, or does it seem like they are kind of three prima donnas here? That coach may need to have a psychology degree while he's at it, you know? It seems like they've got the talent to win it all, but they seem to be a little bit of prima donnas needing to be managed there. Am I wrong on that one, or do you see a little bit of that?
No, and it's really funny. You know, people are like, why are you hiring Steve Nash as the coach? He's never coached before. it's because of the personalities. You know, Steve Nash is a back-to-back NBA MVP, you know, one of the greatest players of all time. He was a point guard, so you know he's smart. They brought him in because, you know what, KD and Kyrie are going to respect him, you know, because look at his resume as a player. You know, and he was just brought in basically to understand what it's like to be a superstar player and how to deal with those superstar players. Is he the X and O coach? Not at all. You know, and that's why he had, you know, different, you know, assistants or, you know, I think they call it an associate head coach.
Yeah.
Basically leading the way in terms of the X and O's. You know what I mean? So, you know, yes, they're prima donnas, but what superstar isn't? You know,
like, and that's why I was asking. Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Prima donnas.
You know, but at the end of the day, managing three of them, you know, and one who has yet to play. I saw a meme of Ben Simmons with a scythe, you know, the teams he's gone to, you know, and done nothing, but they haven't been collecting that check still. Okay, the final team trade rumors, whatever. I don't want to call them America's team in basketball, but it seems kind of like they are America's team when it comes to basketball. The Los Angeles Lakers. Real quick, we don't get into it too much detail if you don't want to, but what do you think Westbrook and Skip Bayless and Westbrook and that whole debacle there? And then what do you see happening with the Lakers? There's so many stories coming out of there, but at the end of the day, what do you see eventually transpiring?
Yeah, okay. Well, as far as, you know, Westbrook and all that stuff, you know, you got to understand the source. Skip Bayless, he talks about sports and, you know, essentially he's just an entertainer too. You know what I mean? He has an ego like all those guys do. So that's just like whatever. As far as like the Lakers go, they're stuck with who they got. You know, no one's going to want, you know, Russell Westbrook. And what Russell Westbrook today opted into is like a $47 billion contract.
Right.
You know? So he's staying. No one's going to really trade for him. Well, they might if a team wants to, you know, an expiring contract. But
you say Skip Bayless is an entertainer and all that, but nobody wants Westbrook. So there may be some truth to Westbrook. I mean, why doesn't it? It's $47.1 million, you're correct, that he opted into. And that's a big price tag. But if he was playing like he was, you know, years ago, but is this past season really hurting him that much that no team wants him?
Well, here's the thing. For the Lakers, you know, I knew it wouldn't work because Russell Westbrook is a high-usage player. Guess who else is? LeBron James. You know, it was never going to work. You know, the reason why Anthony Davis works so well, he doesn't need the ball all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook needs the ball all the time. And, you know, talent-wise, skill-wise, I think Russell Westbrook's still better than, like, 95% of the NBA. You know, it's just he's on a bad team where he's not able to use his talents, you know, as much. You know, that just didn't work. Russell Westbrook, if you were waiting for him to, like, be that, you know, catch and shoot guy taking three, that was never going to happen.
Right.
You know, it was just a bad mix and, like, a bad addition that just didn't make any sense.
But, see, Dennis, you say that was never going to happen, and I believe you, but weren't they thinking the opposite over there in Lakerland? When you say they, there is no they.
No, I'll tell you this.
When I say they, I'm talking about the general manager, scouts.
No, LeBron James thought it was going to work. LeBron James is the one.
Yeah,
LeBron James is the one that wanted Russell Westbrook. You know, so, yeah, bad choice, Bron.
Gotcha.
You know, that was not going to work. No way.
I forgot about that. LeBron James called it. It was LeBron that wanted him. What about you, John? Where do you stand on the whole Westbrook? I don't know the player good enough in terms of his playing to know if it's well-deserved or not. I just know after time, every player becomes a brick just because of age.
Well, he had the reason the Westbrook thing started coming from Skip Bayless was that Westbrook had the lowest three-point percentage out of any starting player. So that's why he started calling him Westbrook. But, like, and listen, I'm the first to admit, I'm not a big Skip Bayless fan. Like, I respect his his breadth of work, but as a personality, he's not the type of guy I would hang out with in a bar. Like, he just seems like
arrogant.
But even all joking about the arrogance aside, I just don't like his mannerisms. With Shannon, Shannon Sharp.
Shannon Sharp, yeah.
When they do that show together. Shannon Sharp is like, you know, he's entertaining. He's like, oh, come on, Skip, you know, whatever. And Skip, you see him sometimes like, yeah, no. You know, like brushing him off, almost like condescending. I don't know if that's an act or if it's real. I've never met the man, so I don't know if it's an act or it's his personality. But I have to say, you have the urge when you see Skip Bayless on TV, you want to either punch him in the face or choke him out or something. Like, to me, at least, he's infuriating to me. And the only reason I'll watch that show is for Sharp. Now, does it mean I think Bayless isn't a good analyst? Absolutely not. And he's probably better as a writer than he is as a TV personality, in my opinion. Because as a writer, you get his analysis. And the sarcasm and the condescension doesn't necessarily translate through the written word as it does through the visual medium. So to me, Skip Bayless, now, I don't know Westbrook enough. The Westbrick pejorative, it's applicable. He was the worst shooter from three-point range. You can't argue that. Whether you think it's appropriate for Skip Bayless to refer to him as Westbrick or not, but I'll give Bayless credit. He seems to have balls of steel. Like, I mean, Westbrook did one of those say it to my face, and he's like, come on my show, I'll say it again. Like, and he will, too. You know, he's had
Bosch,
a history.
Did that with Bosch.
With Bosch, yeah. He'll do it.
You got to give Bayless credit in that. He mans up. And I would agree with you, except for one caveat. He had good ratings on First Take, and then when Stephen A. Smith came, who he recruited for the show, they skyrocketed. And then he's done – the ratings were not great, but they've been consistently improving. I find them all over the top. I have an issue with the analysts because I'm terrible too, but I'm a nobody. Once you get a certain stature – when I was on the radio, I was never disrespectful because they're playing a game I dreamed of. I'm 5'7" Latino. You know, I couldn't even be a place kicker, you know? So I find it disrespectful. You can say it in jest and all that. I actually sent Jim Everett an apology note because remember his issue with Jim Rome?
Right.
And, I was never rough with him, but when you're younger, you're a bit more callous, you know, and it came from those heyday, I was callous. I was like, look, the guy had fan and feed this, that. I never called him names or anything, but I wasn't kind to him. And I just felt bad. I saw the wrong thing, and I sent him a note, apologized, and he responded back. And so when I look at Stephen A. Smith, Shannon Sharp, and those guys, well, Shannon Sharp can back it up. He's got the rings. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I guess my take, I can boil it down to Stephen A. Smith trying to comment on MMA, then a week or two later showing his MMA skills, and he looked like a joke. You know, it's like, have a little respect before you denigrate somebody. But you can. That's your job. You're getting paid for it. I understand it. But there's that fine line. So right. I don't know if Bayless has crossed it. I don't – Stephen A. Smith, he's his own personality, so right or wrong. But I see what you're saying, John. Those mannerisms just irritate me.
Oh, they're very irritating to me.
But he's a good analyst, though.
Yeah, you know? And I'm fairly easy going. Like, people know. Like, I rarely get mad at anybody. But, like, to have someone, like, as you're talking – because to me, the thing that I notice is while they're talking to each other – Shannon will be making a point, right? Like, Skip, let me tell y'all, you know, and look, I'm not accusing him of
John
being...
Skip,
yeah, because he has that, you know, Shannon has that deep voice, and he has that little bit of a southern drawl to him, and, you know, but it's entertaining, he's insightful, and he plays it up. So you're like, okay, I can deal with Shannon Sharp, and at the end of the day, you know it's Joey's fault. He was the same way on NFL Primetime, by the way, when he would face off with... Michael Irvin and Deion Sanders. Talk about a fun trio. Those three guys were outstanding together. But Skip, if Shannon's saying something, he'll be looking down at his notes, and then you hear like this underlying, you know, and it's like, damn, man, like that guy's a monster across the table from you, you know? Like, I would be hesitant to do that simply because one day I may make one too many and the guy may just flip, you know? there's a physical threat there. Not that he's done that. I'm just saying, as two men, you realize if somebody's a lot bigger than you, there's certain – I'm not going to go past a certain line, whether it's – whether he's ever reacted or not. That's what annoys me about Skip Bayless. But to the extent that he's a good analyst, that he's insightful, he's a good writer, all true, and backs up what he says. To your point, when he was challenged by Westbrook, he was like, bring it on. I'm more than happy to tell you to your face. Come on my show. Hey. Come on my podcast.
And what do you say? I started calling you that in 2012.
Yeah.
What do you think, Dennis, about Davis and his style and that type of stuff?
I just want to say two things. All right, so Russell Westbrook, he is not a three-point shooter. He's streaky at best from a three-point range. But let's not forget, this guy averaged a triple-double for multiple seasons. You know what I'm saying? He's an NBA MVP.
Right, you know? Right.
So, when people call him Westbrook, it's like, all right, fine, that's fair enough. He's not good from three. But look at everything else, literally everything else he does really well.
Right.
I mean, to average double digits in points, rebounds, and assists in one season and then do it for multiple seasons, there's not many players that have done that. He's like the only one, him and Oscar Robertson.
Yeah, no.
Oscar Robertson, that's going way back.
That's it.
Total respect on that, by the way. It's not like it's just that if you listen to Skip, he said, I gave him that name, and he told him, why do you call me Westbrook? You had the lowest shooting, 3-point percentage of any starting player in the league. So,
you know, Dan, John can relate to this too. A lot of times in life, it's like we know the true data, the true story, the true info. But again, these stories just gain a life of their own.
Right.
And you can be screaming the truth to them, and then they're like, Westbrook! And it's just, you just want to pull your hair out.
Well,
you know?
It's also a very good pejorative because it plays off his actual name. If you think about it, what is it, like one letter off, two letters off, Westbrook, right? And it fits the perceived narrative that Skip Bayley. So if you're gonna make fun of somebody as a comedian, as somebody who loves comedy, I'm sure Dennis as a comedy writer will appreciate too. That's almost like the perfect joke to mock him by calling him Westbrook in that context is almost a perfect line. Like if you look at all the boxes for comedy, for insult, for sarcasm, like that Westbrook checks all those boxes off. Like I appreciate it as a writer that is a great, that is like a great line, you know, like, so, but Dennis, you were saying Westbrook, really not a brick layer, obviously, but I mean, but in terms of the whole Skip Bayless thing, what do you read on that? Like him personally on that?
I really don't care. It's like, whatever. I don't watch him. In fact, I just skip that show. But I don't really care. But I think the latest, you know, analyst, opinionator, bloviator, versus player, feud to watch now is Kyrie Irving and Stephen Smith, because Kyrie Irving put Stephen Smith on blast. Stephen Smith replied, well, come on my show and let's talk about it.
He blasted him first on Twitter. He came out with a theme like, your dad, whatever. I ain't talking yet. No, you're right, Dennis. But John, you forgot the one most important check mark of all.
What's that?
Television. It's great for
ratings.
Television in that little segment, and it's gone viral because look, we're talking about it. And that's where there was a study done, like on the Tonight Show, actually all the late night shows, of how terrible the ratings are, but the sheer number of people who watch the little, you know, online in terms of what that does for the show. Dennis, final question. What have we missed about the draft or the rumors that we as fans or fantasy football people who are already looking towards next season or the nut jobs out there looking to make a bet on something, anything we're missing or did you cover it all well for us?
I think I pretty much covered it all well. I mean, you know, I think the real thing that really stands out about this draft, you know, is just what were the Knicks thinking? Like, I mean, and the funny part is we know what they're thinking. They want to get, you know, salary cap space to sign Jalen Brunson. But honestly, I don't think they're going to sign Jalen Brunson. Wow. I think he signs with the Mets, you know?
But weren't the Mets saying
more money?
Yeah, but weren't the Mets saying that they pretty much kind of not giving up? They literally kind of giving up on him, assuming he's going to sign with the Knicks. That's
not going to happen because he was a key piece. He fits really well for that team because he doesn't have to be a number one.
And now
they traded for Christian Wood. That's another scorer that Jalen Brunson can pass the ball to. You know, so there's no way. Look, if Jalen Brunson signs with the Knicks, know two things, okay? Jalen Brunson's agent is Leon Rose, the basketball of operations for the Knicks, right? His agent is Leon Rose's son. You know what I mean? Number one. Number two, the New York Knicks hired a new assistant coach, Rick Brunson, Jalen Brunson's dad. So if you want to talk about, like, pandering and all that stuff.
And you still think he stays with the Mavericks.
But I still think he stays with the Mavericks because that makes the most sense basketball-wise. Mm. And money-wise, because the Mavs will be able to pay him more,
right,
you know, and give him more years.
Yeah.
So it's just like a no-brainer. But
and they're closer to a championship.
All this stuff, and it might be for nothing.
Yeah, and as a player, wouldn't he? I mean, you want the ring. The Mavericks are much closer to championship material than the Knicks. So everything you say makes logical sense. But because at the end of the day, somebody would go, "Well, the Knicks are going to show him the money," but you just said the Mavericks can pay him more. So maybe he's closer to the family, wants to go work with him on that. So who knows? But Dennis, thank you as always. It's a pleasure to have you on. We love having you on because there's no question we can throw at you and trip you up. Not that we try to do that, but your knowledge is second to none. Real quick for the audience here, what's the website they can go to check out your work?
All right, look, I just started a Substack. It's basketballsom, state of mind, .substack.com. Eventually, I will get basketballstateofmind.com up on there. But go there, read it. I plan to have new content up Mondays and Thursdays, so look for some tomorrow. And if you like it, subscribe to the newsletter. And I'll love you as much as I can through the internet, through all the wires, and all that other good stuff.
Dennis, I wouldn't be saying like that the way the porn industry is moving along.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen with that? But Dennis, thank you so much. Hey, everybody, we're going to have Dennis back on. We're not quite sure when, but we want updates throughout the off season. And be sure to visit his site. He'll get at least one subscriber. I'll be heading over there after we get off. Not through the wires or anything.
Oh, but no, I will say NBA free agency is coming up. So
there you go.
Lots of players can like opt in. You know, Kyrie Irving, he says he's opting in, but that doesn't become official until Thursday. So free agency's coming up. Let's talk again next week and talk about where, you know, all these players went.
Boom.
Sounds like a plan, brother. And everybody, you've been listening to Points on the Board. You can find this episode and all past episodes that are still relevant at sportsgrumblings.com. Everybody, thank you for listening. Big John, as always, thank you. Dennis, we look forward to having you back in America and the world. Good night.